Welcome into a Sunday morning edition of the Locked On Knicks podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. This is a crossover episode with the Locked On Nets crew. We break down a 109-99 Nets victory, the best assets on both teams, including a heated debate on just how good Kevin Knox is. Spoiler, they are not quite as high on him as we are. And then we finish up with some big picture thoughts on this Knicks season and kind of how they're progressing going forward. So we touch on a lot. Really fun episode with the guys. Let's get to it on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
Milikina.
What he does is contagious, like.
To Trier. Trier drives down. Oh! Alonzo Trier. Across the lane. The Porzingis fires up a three. Boom! That one goes down and the game is tied.
Becomes infectious.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. At least initially going solo on this edition of the podcast. We already told you we were going to have a crossover episode with the Locked On Nets guys, but we didn't get too much into the specifics of the game, so I just kind of wanted to give like a quick two-minute rundown, kind of go player by player, give some quick thoughts on this one. Noah Vonleh, we actually do mention this a little bit in the opening part of the episode, but he was absolutely awesome in the initial portion of the game. I didn't even realize his career high was just 16 points, and he had 14 about 6.5 minutes into this one. Kind of slowed down from there, but still 22-point, 13-rebound, 3-assist effort. Nothing to be ashamed of on his part, though he did kind of get bullied by Ed Davis on the other end, and I thought that's really what ultimately allowed Brooklyn to take control in the second half as the Nets finished the game out rebounding the Knicks by 27, and that included 18 rebounds on the offensive end. So that's a little bit of a shot against Vonleh, though he did finish with 13 and did not have a ton of help in that capacity. Trey Burke, at least statistically, was awesome off the bench. 25 points, 5 assists, 10 of 19 from the field in 33 minutes, but I don't know. I mean, they weren't like empty stats. Like, certainly, like, you take his offense out of the picture and the Knicks really get blown out in this game, but he just got torched offensively, as is somewhat indicated by his minus 14 plus minus for the game. Minus 4 plus minus for the game. Not that Frank was much better at minus 3 in 19 minutes, but Shabazz Napier was getting basically whatever he wanted on Burke on the other end of the floor, so it kind of canceled out. It was a pretty good performance from him on the offensive end. Tim Hardaway was atrocious, 2 of 14, 0 of 6 from 3. That's pretty indicative of his night. Don't really need to go into more depth than that. Frank was really, again, lacking for confidence in terms of scoring the ball and kind of being aggressive, but he did have 5 assists, 4 rebounds, 2 steals. It was like a 2.5 minute stretch in the second half where he had back-to-back a steal, a block, and then took a charge. So kind of a mixed effort from him. Again, you take the foul trouble out of the picture, maybe it's a more interesting night, but six fouls in 19 minutes, though he continues to do a really good job on D'Angelo Russell. There was this great stat going into the game that D'Angelo Russell in 74 possessions going up against Frank Ntilikina had only scored 6 points total, and I'd imagine that hadn't changed dramatically after this one. It felt like whenever Frank was in the game, Russell was not doing a whole lot. Kevin Knox, nondescript night from him, 2 for 11 from the field, 4 rebounds, 2 steals, no assists, no blocks, 7 points, and I mentioned it in our little tease at the beginning, but he is a guy that we have a lot of conversation on throughout this episode. Then you get into, is there anyone else really worth mentioning? Yeah, Mitchell Robinson. He was 6 points, 4 blocks in just 16 minutes. Again, really just awesome night as a rim protector. There was this play where, I'm trying to remember which net it was. I want to say Travion Graham just drove right into his body and kind of stuck his shoulder into him, and that's really what you're taught to do with a shot blocker, to create some separation or at least force them to reach, hit you on the wrist and get a foul. But Robinson, just so ridiculously long, was still able to block the shot. And again, just kind of indicative of what a force he's going to be going forward. And I continue to be amazed that he dropped into the second round. Damian Dotson, just 3 points in 22 minutes. Not really going to cut it from him. He's a guy, again, aesthetically, that I am really, really high on. But it's similar to him and Frank. At some point, the scoring just has to come along, at least to a moderate degree, so you can really, I guess, appreciate the more subtle aspects of their games. There wasn't really too much more to this one. The Nets were in foul trouble early, particularly D'Angelo Russell. Rodion Skrouts is a big part of their team, and Jared Allen. But eventually their talent went out, despite the fact that they're missing arguably two of their three best players, which is a real indicator of how crummy of a situation the Knicks are in right now. But that can all change going forward, and that's something we get into on this crossover. So without further ado, here's Josh Bass and Marcus Barahal with Locked On Nets.
We are here, Locked On Nets. I apologize, first of all, for I missed this week's episode. I was traveling as Marcus did a great job recapping the Nets' big comeback win over the Orlando Magic, and also the initial news of Spencer Dinwiddie's injury, reported first by unexpected source Caron Butler. Marcus is joining me here again, and also we have a special guest to recap the Nets' dominating win over the New York Knicks, and that is our frenemy and my former co-host, Gavin Shaw. First of all, Marcus, how are you doing today?
Great, Josh. Saturday night, we in the spot. Don't believe me? Just listen.
Now the Bruno Mars to our contingent, Gavin.
Wow, I think that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me. Happy to be back. I missed it. We've done a couple of three-man pods before. They were always great. The audio quality was always flawless. So I'm looking forward to continued chemistry and continued great audio with you guys.
Yeah, no, and we're definitely excited to have you. It's kind of like it's one of those things that you think you don't miss at all, and then it comes back, and it's slightly nostalgic. You think you're still better off, but it's good to have you back. Gavin, how have the Knicks been treating you, first of all?
It's been, you know, I do miss the Nets from a competitiveness standpoint, which isn't something I'd ever thought I'd say in my basketball lifetime, but as you guys are well aware, I think they had won their first game of this stretch before my last podcast. And since then, I think the total streak is now 19 in 24 games, if I remember correctly. They are the hottest team in all of basketball. So clearly, I mean, Nets fans, regardless of the quality of podcast, which I think has been outstanding so far, you guys have done a great job with it. Just in terms of the team itself, I'm glad I could leave you with such a gift as the Nets' excellent performance. As far as the Knicks go, it's kind of cool getting back in touch with, I was always open about the fact that I was a lifelong Knicks fan, so it's nice seeing all the games. I do miss Ryan Rucco and Ian Eagle and Sarah Kustak and Richard Jefferson all being part of my life.
You don't miss Michael Grady?
I a little bit. To the point that actually last night I watched the first half on the Knicks broadcast. I was kind of curious to hear Ed Cohen, the Knicks radio guy. He was doing the game on TV. But then for the second half, I switched to Ryan, RJ, and Sarah, and it made me happy. I genuinely loved it. Not a great game necessarily, but just it kind of felt like I was back with my friends. So I really enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah, no, I didn't know it was Ed Cohen. I listened on the Knicks broadcast. I always thought it was Spiro Ditas the whole game, but thank you for clarifying that. This wasn't the prettiest game, but again, the Nets get another win, 19-5 in the PG, the post-Gavin era. Marcus, it was sloppy, but what were your takeaways from this Nets win?
Yeah, this was a really weird game. D'Angelo Russell was in foul trouble in the first half for Brooklyn, so we didn't get a ton of him. You know, I kind of expected that this would be his showing out, kind of like last-minute all-star case with Dinwiddie now out. But we got a lot of Theo Pinson, which I was excited for. Got a lot of Ed Davis. I was also excited for that. We even got a little bit of Mitch Creek, you know, a little bit of everything in this game. From the Knicks' perspective, Noah Vonleh was James Harden-esque in the first quarter, and then he was Noah Vonleh-esque in the last three quarters. Gavin, what did you see from the Knicks' perspective?
Yeah, I was shocked by Vonleh's performance. His career high, because I thought he had better games this year. I'm shocked to hear during the broadcast was only 16, and he had 14 through the first half of the first quarter. And then kind of predictably, it all went downhill from there. He stopped hitting shots. This was honestly like we talked about a lot on our last podcast. Like I thought their performance against the Rockets and just that game from an entertainment perspective was probably the best I've seen the Knicks all season. This one wasn't maybe like I guess it lost like a little bit of luster with Dinwiddie out, and obviously the Knicks were without Emmanuel Mudiay, so gained a little bit of luster from that perspective. But it was just like such a like nondescript game, like to the point that like Ed Davis, I thought, was the best player on the floor for either teams, which in my mind, at least on the NBA level, is the definition of a nondescript game. But he was just a monster. I was shocked by how good he was, not only dominating on the glass, but also facilitating, finishing, getting to the foul line. That was the best I've ever seen him. And I was simultaneously really frustrated by the Knicks' inability to stop him. And it was kind of interesting that Fizdale, because this has kind of been the big story around the Knicks, refused to go down as Cantor, who's kind of a notorious Nets killer, and you would think would have a little bit of a better shot against Davis.
Yeah, we've talked about how Cantor's that exact type of player who always gives the Nets trouble, like a Vucevic, like Miles Turner. There's just kind of like a bigger center who can kind of pound Jared Allen inside. And while I thought Mitchell Robinson did like a decent job, especially defensively, it was interesting to see Davis just kind of push him around on the offensive glass. Davis had 7 offensive rebounds in this game. It was getting to the line at will. Part of that was just because the Knicks were just fouling him because they couldn't really do anything else. And Josh, you told me pre-podcast how Ed Davis can't really make a free throw, which is true. It was sad. But still, I was encouraged by Ed's play on the offensive glass and just his energy that he brought off the bench.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was kind of the turning point in this game for me, him and Theo the Pincer Pinson, because the Nets really, you know, they struggled with the Knicks' length in the first 6 minutes, and the Knicks are a horrible defensive team. I think they're 29th in defensive rating. Yeah, sorry to break it to you, Gav.
No.
The 29th in defensive rating. But, you know, the lineup they had starting, it had a lot of length. Vonleh's a good athlete. Lance Thomas is pretty mobile. Frank is obviously known for his defense because it's certainly not his offense. And they were giving the Nets problems. Guys like D'Angelo Russell, it was hard for him to make plays. Shabazz Napier didn't have the size to make plays over the defense. And, you know, Knicks got to a great first quarter. It wasn't really until Ed Davis came in and started changing the game with not only the offensive rebounds he got, those 7 offensive rebounds, but also he got fouled a couple times underneath when the Knicks guys just couldn't box him out, so creating even more possessions for the Nets. And I thought his energy changed the game. And also Pinson coming in and hitting those 3 threes in the first half. Gavin, I'll ask you, because you hadn't really gotten to take a look at Pinson, because your departure was kind of before his emergence with the team, and he still really hasn't emerged per se, but this was kind of his first play in game action. Curious to hear what you thought of young Theo.
Yeah, Josh, you know, when I was thinking about switching to the Knicks podcast, the number one factor to me was I really hadn't got to see Theo Pinson yet, and I knew with just the amount of time I was going to spend watching Knicks games, it would limit the potential of me seeing Theo Pinson play basketball, and that was genuinely the number one factor for me. But
well, he's better than Frank, I think.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't go that far.
Who says that?
It was nice to get to see him. I've been a big Theo Pinson fan since day one. I remember him as a 5-star recruit going to North Carolina, and I expected him to just be a monster because anyone who's ever seen his high school mixtape, like he's just like jumping over defenders, and this is sacrilegious, but he had a little bit of Zion in him at the high school level.
Ooh,
and he just in terms of his dunking ability. And then obviously in college, he just never really learned how to shoot, and it was always kind of frustrating, but I got to see him in person a couple of times in college, and he always really impressed me and just his intuitiveness as a passer. And to me, that's always, even despite his inability to learn how to shoot at that level, that's so suggestive to me of someone who has a skill set and has the basketball intelligence to potentially succeed in the NBA given his athletic abilities. So I was, Josh, even if you remember going back to this preseason when we were talking about it on the podcast, he was someone I was really high on, and I was even thinking like he might end up being the Nets' biggest contributor out of the rookie class this season, and obviously that hasn't come to fruition given how good Rhodey Karutz has been. But he was awesome in this game, and I think you're absolutely right. I think he even sent a text over. Him and Travion Graham kind of changed this game with their energy and their switchability. Marcus, you just showed me a little note on your phone about it. Just the length the Nets had across the board and the athletic ability with Karutz, with Graham, with Pinson was really impressive, and it really stifled the Knicks team that's already kind of lacking for offense when Hardaway isn't playing well and when Cantor isn't playing at all.
Yeah, Hardaway especially was really bad in this game. He played 39 minutes and was 2 of 14.
That's Kevin, a good game for him, actually. So
Kevin Knox, 2 of 11, so they combined to go 4 for 25. That's a 16% field goal percentage.
Yeah, and that's what David Fizdale's looking for. So.
I guess, I mean, are you, like, being that you also, like, are a Knicks fan, do the losses, do they hurt, or does it feel more like, oh, we're getting closer to the draft odds that we want?
You know, it's funny. I literally had this conversation with Alex the other day after the Rockets game, because he's actually like, I think on this podcast, I've come off as like a very hardline, like pro tanker. He is more so than I am. Like he really like doesn't involve a lot of emotion. And he's like, yeah, this is perfect. Like a close loss. That Rockets game, I really wanted to win out of spite just because of the way like Harden was playing and they played so well at the end. This game, I was fine with them losing. Like when they're down by like 10 most of the game and they're not shooting that well, like it's probably better just to take the L. And obviously, I mean, the emphasis with the lottery rules Bulls now is on the back end rather than the front end. Like, you don't necessarily have a better shot at the number one pick, but you have a much better shot at not falling to the seventh pick. In fact, it's impossible if you finish with the worst record. So that's kind of what I'm looking at from a Knicks perspective. And basically, like, if they're in it against a great team, I want them to win. If not, I'm kind of okay with it. Marcus, you're also a Knicks fan. What's your perspective on that?
I am also a Knicks fan. I kind of tend to lean with Marceda. Obviously, I haven't watched much Knicks this year. I've kind of shifted to watching more Nets basketball, and it's been a treat. But yeah, I think that if you can lose by two every game, that's what I would sign up for.
Yep. You know, I'm here with two Knicks fans, so please send help. But that's going to do it for segment one here on Locked On Nets. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about the game, and also put Gavin through something that I'm calling, as of now, the Christian Winfield test. Locked On Nets, segment two. Coming off a great segment one, where I think we all hit our stride, and we're going to carry that into segment two. You know, the Nets, this game wasn't a lot to write home about. I think a lot of the pins and excitement came in the first half. Ed Davis continued his dominant play throughout the second half, and the Nets did a good job once they extended that lead to about 8 or 10, not really letting the Knicks get back into it, even though they did bloody Rondé Hollis-Jefferson.
That was our only goal going into the night. We had about a big meeting at the center of the court, said, "Bloody Jefferson!" And like everyone broke.
And if some people thought you meant Richard Jefferson.
Yeah, Richard Jefferson.
Yeah, he kind of cringed on the sideline. Yeah. Like, Ruko, like, went to shield.
I saw him flinching, yeah. Weird game.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's a game of runs. Mitchell Creek got his first NBA action, went 1 of 2 from the line.
Mitch Creek!
I think a lot of people didn't know who Mitchell Creek was, including my dad, who said, "Who is this guy?" But
he's the Australian guy. Right?
Yeah. Okay. Glad to see him in the in Brooklyn. He's done a nice job as a Long Island Net both this season and last. And excited for him to get some run.
Wasn't he? He was on the Amanda Show when he was younger, right? Didn't they? Oh no, that was Mooney's Creek. Never mind. Go ahead.
It was Moody's Point, first
Moody's
of all.
Moody's Point, yeah.
Which is a nickname that I tried to start for Emmanuel Moutier when he was drafted. Did not catch on.
So he was not on Nickelodeon.
Gavin,
I
don't think you're going to be generating a lot of crossover listeners from this episode.
Knicks fans love Mitch Creek. He's actually our favorite Net collectively. I did a poll.
But, okay, Gavin, I'm going to put you through the Christian Winfield test.
Sure.
And what we asked Christian was, take these five players and rank who you would want to build around, not from a contract standpoint, just take them as a player. Mm. And those players are, from the Nets, D'Angelo Russell, Caris LeVert, and Jarrett Allen. And from the Knicks, Kristaps Porzingis and Kevin Knox.
Okay.
What do you got?
I think KP is still clearly the number one. Obviously, that you're taking a little bit of a risk there because there's just not really an example of someone of his height and kind of, I guess, game profile coming back from a torn ACL. But I would still argue that his ceiling is far and away the highest of the group. And I've talked about this a lot in the Knicks podcast. I've talked about it a little on this Nets podcast. Like, I think his like greatest utility is, again, that you can just play him with any other type of big. And he gives you a kind of lineup versatility that's really hard to achieve with a center in the NBA, with his ability to hit threes, protect the rim, and kind of work as a rim roller. So I think he's pretty clearly number one. My Knicks homerism that I don't have to suppress anymore now that I'm not on this podcast wants me to put Kevin Knox at number two. And he did have about a month span recently where he was putting up these incredible numbers. I think he was one of the five best first quarter scorers in all of basketball for a month, which is crazy because he is just 19. Marcus is pointing at the 2 for 11 from this game, which is concerning me.
And also four
Marcus
turnovers and zeros.
He's a Knicks fan. So I think, I don't know. Because I'm interested to get your input on this, guys, because I think I know what Josh will say. But, like, LeVert is, like, obviously, like, he showed, like, a ton before he was hurt. But LeVert is also literally 5 years older than Knox. Shorter, he is a better athlete, though. I'm pretty confident Knox is going to be a better shooter long-term, but he's never going to have LeVert's athletic ability. So where do you guys kind of go back and forth on that debate?
For me, I think that, obviously, shooting is super important, and I think the league is kind of caught up on that that's one of, if not the most important skill you can have. But for me, I always look at playmaking and like passing ability as what I look to build around, because I always think that if you have guys on the court who are willing to distribute and get other guys involved, I think you can fill in the rest pretty easily. And so I haven't seen a lot of passing from Kevin Knox. I mean, I haven't watched the Knicks as closely as you, obviously.
No, you're right. I mean, that isn't the strength of his game right now.
But yeah, but I think that with LeVert and with Russell especially lately, just to bring him into the conversation, he's been passing the ball extremely well. His assist to turnover ratio, I think he's up at like 3-1 now. For that, despite like a career average of like 1.5-1, so he's been passing the ball a lot better lately. And Josh and I have talked about how, for him to make a jump as an offensive player, he'd have to either improve his passing or get to the line more. He hasn't really improved at getting to the line, but his passing has gotten a lot better. And to me, that's something that is hard to teach and is just super, super valuable.
Yeah, and I think with Russell, that the big thing for him is, even though his assists are good and getting better, the passes he's making are so high level. It's like getting guys very open for dunks, layups, threes, valuable shots. He's not like passing it off to the next guy and then that guy's making an ISO move and he's getting a cheap assist out of it. He really is passing guys open, and it's a trope, but he's living up to it. And
he's throwing in like head fakes too and ball fakes.
Absolutely.
The one that he had to Davis in this game was really awesome. Like, he was like thinking about like throwing it back to Pinson, and Davis was just cutting down the middle. So instead he gave like a little ball fake and then just crossed into the middle of the court. And you can see the Knicks defense obviously isn't sterling, but like they were just frozen. And it was just like one of those like little like subtle lookaways where you get the idea that like he kind of pre-planned it. That it was an awesome play. And like for someone, like, it really stood out to me as someone who hasn't watched him in like a month and a half now, like, that he was really, really, like, he's grown in that time.
And I think, yeah, his passes are super valuable. I agree that the last 6 weeks to 2 months for him have been really kind of changing his outlook around the league from guys like myself. And I wouldn't call myself in the league and around the league, but...
You're around.
Yeah, I'm around.
Marcus is the league, and you're around.
I'm in the periphery. But yeah, my thing with Knox is that he hasn't shown any skill outside of scoring. And then when you look at his... kind of scoring super inefficient. I mean, lower true shooting percentage than a guy like D'Angelo Russell has in any season. And I don't understand, because he's 6'9 with pretty good athleticism, and his three-point shot isn't broken. It's 34% from three, but he's shooting under 40% on just twos, which is pretty unacceptable for a guy of his size and athleticism. Gavin, is it more his shot selection or his touch? What do you see?
Well, I think what it was is that he got off to like a pretty terrible start to the season. And when you're a teenager coming into the NBA, like, again, like, I think it's the exception rather than the rule that those guys are efficient. And obviously you look at that on a sliding scale and you say, okay, but how inefficient are you? And he was extraordinarily inefficient to start the year. Yeah, and he was playing hurt for a lot of the season, obviously. And then, like, you combine that with the fact, like, that the ecosystem around him was about, like, the furthest thing from ideal possible, and that you have two vets in Hardaway and Cantor who perceive themselves as superstars and are anything but offensively, and that he didn't really get to play with a true point guard. He was getting a lot of his minutes along Emmanuel Mudiay and Trey Burke, who amongst point guards that get rotation minutes in the NBA are probably two of the worst passers in that demographic. So I think everything was kind of setting him up to fail. And then he went on this run recently where he was just dominant in the first quarters of game, dominant in the third quarters of game. Basically, anytime he could catch his breath, he was really, really excelling offensively. And just the diversity in his offensive game is what makes me really bullish on him. The fact that he really excelled in transition, getting to the rim, not really settling. He's added the mid-range game a little bit, having a floater. And the three-pointer was dropping for a stretch. He looked really confident taking that shot. Now it seems like he's kind of slumping again, and he hasn't been playing as well. But just the flashes of greatness from him have been really, really high. And I think the consensus amongst most people who follow this team is that we're pretty sure he's going to be an all-star down the road just because he's that level of scorer.
Yeah, I mean, I think Knox is going to be a decent player over time. But the hot stretch you're looking at, I mean, he shot 38% from three in December, but his overall field goal percentage was 40%, and true shooting barely cracked 50. So it's still, he has a really, really long way to go, and I think he slumped a lot in January, and I think I like his tools, but he's just not putting it all together. And it's not like he was this great shake at Kentucky, a similar type of player, as a guy that could get hot quickly. But overall, when you look at an 82-game season, what impact is he making on the court?
I just wanted to say that, like, in terms of like this rookie year inefficiency, I think Nets fans can look at a guy like D'Angelo Russell, who during his first year was playing in that like terrible Kobe season, and then once he was kind of able to find the right basketball situation, things have seemingly fallen into place a little bit better for him. So I think next year this Knicks team could look completely different. They could have Zion and Kevin Durant for all we know, and that would be a completely different situation than what the roster looks like this year. So I think it's tough to judge Knox early, just because this could end up being like an outlier season for him.
Yeah. So yeah. Gavin, what's your
yeah,
two, I guess, or five?
Yeah, I think I'm kind of settled. So I go LeVert too. I just think like what he was just so impressive, and like anyone who's been following this podcast for a while knows that I absolutely love his game. I think I'd still go Knox three because of the ceiling, and then my instinct is to go Alan Moore just because like I love four, but I think I'm gonna have to go D'Lo four just because of like this recent stretch is so impressive, and Alan, who continues to be really good this season, and defensively obviously he's had all those highlight plays. He hasn't quite taken the jump that I was hoping for him. And it's not, it doesn't mean like I'm not really bullish on his future. Like, I still think he's going to be like one of the top 10 centers in the league for a long time. I just think offensively, all the other guys have a higher upside, and that's ultimately my priority, unless you think Allen could be like a Gobert level game changer defensively, which I think he'll be very good. I don't think he'll ever be in that tier. So I think I lean Allen fifth.
Yeah, I think, I forget exactly what I said in the Winfield pod, but I think Allen in Knox is the toughest debate for me, 4 or 5. I think just Allen is a better player pretty clearly right now, and I think he could end up being the better player for the future. But given kind of positional scarcity, I think there's a pretty real argument for having Knox above him.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, I mentioned this on the Winfield pod, but I think it's just tough to build around a center, and like, D'Angelo Russell could make an all-star team this year, and I don't know if Jared Allen ever will. Mm-hmm. Not to say that he won't be a great player. I mean, he could be as good as Clint Capella, which would be great, and I don't know that Clint Capella will ever make an all-star team either. It's just a tough position with where the NBA is right now.
Yeah. Wait, so Marcus, just to clarify, you've Russell 3 and Knox 4 then?
Yeah.
Okay. Traitor.
Gavin, you know, a lot's been talked about this Knicks season. You know, coming in, I think the thesis was that they wanted to obviously be bad and have a good pick, but did they ever think it was going to be this bad? And kind of looking at where the Knicks are as we're closing in on the All-Star break, how would you grade their season versus expectations? Because on the Nets side, it's clearly an A, the way things have gone.
Right.
and I just want to see if you guys have lived up to that.
Yeah. well, it's funny because there is this actually like a Knicks film school, which great podcast people should check out too.
It's a podcast also?
Yeah, it is a podcast. Yeah, they're actually, they're doing good stuff.
Are they your glue guys?
They are, I don't know, I think it's more of a friendly relationship. It's like we've had them on our pod, Marceda has been on their pod. Not to say there's anything antagonistic between you two, but you guys just haven't done the crossover episode yet. So I think I'm waiting for that just to know for sure that you're on good terms. That being said, it's interesting because they had this tweet today, and it was basically like all like the like crotchety, like slightly older beat writers, including Mark Berman to a lesser degree because I like him more, Frank Isola, Steve Proper, and they were all talking about...
Isn't how... Steve Popper, not Proper?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, he's not a fan of the show. Anyways, they all had these like headlines saying like Knicks like deciding to tank, like it's like this new thing, and someone else had like this tweet being like if anyone tells you like the Knicks preseason expectation was that they were gonna tank, like they're a moron, like they like wanted to win this year. And I'm like, what are you like? I think like, I mean, at least in my mind, like even when I wasn't covering this team or watching this team every day, like it was obvious that this was always gonna be a tank season. Like there was never that window to be good. And like the KP injury, like the one blessing of it was that it does give you that opportunity to tank. And the Knicks year after year after year, they failed to do it correctly, and they always end up with the 8th pick in the draft, and like they missed Steph Curry by one pick 8 years ago. They end up with Channing Frye and like that other draft who ended up going on to a pretty good career, but not really with the Knicks. This last season, if KP had gotten hurt earlier, maybe they would have had a real shot at Doncic, and so they end up with Knox, who's good, but obviously not the same thing. So this is kind of their first real window to do this. And in that sense, like, I think it's perfect. And their guys, I mean, despite how poorly they played collectively, their younger guys have shown very real flashes. Frank, you have to see it offensively at some point. I think that's kind of the bottom line with him. He continues to be very good defensively, and you just kind of wonder when that's going to translate. But in terms of plus-minus, he's been one of the Knicks' best players last season, and when he's been on the floor with the right guys this season, that is still held true. And they found other pieces in Dotson, Trier. I mean, we just saw him drop 31 on that Rockets team. Like, he's been very, very good for stretches, horrible for others, but for an undrafted guy, it's really exciting. And then Mitchell Robinson, at least in my mind, like, he's maybe the guy I'm most excited about of that group, possibly not including Knox, but his rim protection, you guys got to see a little bit of it this past game. He had 4 blocks in just 16 minutes, and he was coming off another outstanding effort against the Rockets. I think actually coming into this one, after hitting his first couple of shots, he made his last 13 shots from the field. He really does seem like he could be like a Rudy Gobert type player down the road. Obviously, that's the ceiling, not the floor. But there are a lot of reasons to be excited if you're a Knicks fan. And I think the fact that they've actually embraced the tank is the number one amongst them.
Okay, so give me a grade to answer the question.
Oh, sure. I guess, like, do you mean like season long?
Relative to my
personal expectations. Yeah. I'd say like a B plus. Like, because I want them to tank. Like, I don't want them to be like in the playoff race. Like, what good would that do? Like, this is like, the only thing I'm grading on is the progress of their young guys. And to me, just given what Knox has shown in terms of upside and Robinson in particular, that translates into a B plus, even with Frank not developing how he ideally would have.
Okay, Marcus, I'll let you go before I comment on that.
Sure, I'll let you cool off a little, Josh. I think that the Knicks have definitely like you said, they've shown flashes. I think Frank is really good on defense. We saw that in this game. I thought he defended James Harden well in that Rockets game when they got matched up.
Kevin, he also fouled out in 19 minutes. I'll add that.
He did. That's true. There were a lot of fouls called in this game. Yeah, I think Vonleh's been an interesting piece, and if they can trade him for something, that would be a win. Mitchell Robinson, I agree. I like him a lot, and I think he's going to be really good. I think he's kind of like a version of Jared Allen for the Knicks. I don't really like Trey Burke. I'm not sold on Alonzo Trier. I think he's kind of... I called him preseason, not on this podcast because I wasn't hosting, but just in conversation.
To yourself.
Just to myself, yeah. Looking in the mirror. I said that he reminded me of current Derrick Rose, which I meant as an insult, but now is maybe kind of a compliment.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, like I said with Knox, I just want to see more like time-wise from him. I think a B-plus is probably a little high. I think that...
Settle on a B.
Sure. I think I'd probably go like C-plus, because I do think that the tanking has been good. Even if it wasn't planned, I think it's the right thing. And the development, like you said, we've seen flashes, but not quite enough to make me feel certain about anyone.
Yeah, sure. And for me, I get what you guys are saying. I think the Mitchell Robinson pick and the way he's panned out so far, even though he's still like kind of finding himself and very raw, that's an A plus type value. For me, even though Frank still shows flashes on defense, his offense is really bad, as you guys know. But more importantly, Fizdale has zero confidence in him, and it seems like he's not part of the franchise long term. And he was just the 8th overall pick. Knox, I don't think he's lived up to top 10 pick expectations so far. It doesn't mean that he's a bust or anything like that, but I don't think he's performed at a level that you'd define as anything more than like encouraging in spurts. And just kind of the way that Fizdale has managed his team, you know, I don't know. I feel like with the whole Cantor situation and guys in and out, it seems like he's more focused on developing Moutier and Vonleh and kind of these reclamation projects as opposed to the actual young pieces. Why is a guy like Alonzo Trier or Damian Dotson, those guys are playing, but Frank, his minutes are very sporadic. Mitchell Robinson should be playing more than 16 minutes. And Trey Burke's taking 33 minutes.
Well, that was because of foul trouble, mostly. And, I mean, because Moody is hurt. Like, Trey Burke hasn't... Like, this is the first time Trey Burke has played in 2 weeks.
But Frank's always out of the rotation, basically.
That's been less true. I think he's played, 30 minutes, two of the last, five games or so. But yeah, we can't check that because the internet's off. Yeah. But it's been something like... No, I mean, that's a fair claim. And honestly, that's been the Knicks fans' biggest frustration with both Fizdale and the season as a whole, Frank's role and his changing role and why can't he get any kind of consistency? Why can't you just trust him to be as a point guard? Because again, despite all the crummy offensive numbers, again, he's certainly relative to Moutier and what's his name? Burke. I forgot. I honestly forgot he existed. He's been a real positive compared to those guys. You can even go back to last game against the Rockets, where Moutier had much better counting stats. Moutier had 16 points, and Frank played 24 minutes and didn't score, which isn't good. But Frank was a +8, and Moutier was a -18, and that's been the pattern all season. Right. Frank has found a way to make a positive impact when he's on the floor, even when he's not scoring, and it seems like now that they've made the move to bench Cantor, and maybe looks like they're going to trade Hardaway, I think if some team wants him and is willing to take on that contract, which would be stupid, but more power to him, I think it could shift in a direction where someone like Frank is getting more consistent time. That answers your question.
I just don't think the Knicks have put him in a good position to succeed. No, I think he's a good player. And then also, I don't know. I mean, the Knicks, we all knew they were going to be really bad, but they're on pace for 17 wins. And I think unless they get Zion and they get the number one pick in the draft lottery, I really don't see a KD or someone coming there just because – even though they're getting KP back, this team sucks right now. I mean, 17 on pace for 17 wins is horrific. And I know they're the Knicks and they have that cachet, but it's not like Fizdale has done, you know, even when the Nets were really bad, and obviously Brooklyn does not have the cachet of the Knicks at all, and I know obviously. That. But Kenny was having these guys playing hard, playing the right way, and still competing against really good teams. The Knicks right now are just completely... I mean, look at the Nets roster last night. They did not have a good team, especially without Spencer Dinwiddie. This isn't a roster that's that much more talented than the Knicks, and they wiped the floor with them in the second half.
You look at the Knicks, they're pretty derelict. I take this Nets team, even with the injuries, over this Knicks team every single time.
Yeah, because they play the right way.
No, I mean, they also play better players.
And but Rhodey Kurucz was a second round rookie. Joe Harris.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying they didn't get steals. I'm just saying like Kurucz is like a real, like he's good. Like he's
Because the Nets have also have identified the talent and coached them up.
Yeah, right, is that a difference between like Sean Marks and what the Knicks have had in the front office?
I mean, it's a couple. I'll say this.
We have the better SM, GM.
This is also like Fizdale's like first season. Like I think you have to keep that in mind too.
But he's also a seasoned head coach. He should be
sure. But I mean, but like, what are you questioning like player development? Because like, is that going to show up over 40 games? And like the fact like that what they've gotten out of Trier and Robinson is second round picks. Like Trier less so than Robinson to it just because of the recent inefficiency. But the way he was playing before he got hurt with like 50, 40, like 80 splits, like in scoring really, really well. And Robinson, like the way he's like the fact that Robinson is even playing basketball this year is nuts. Like don't forget, like he didn't even play college basketball last season. Like I think like Fizdale and the Knicks player development staff does deserve some measure of credit for that. And obviously you can argue that they really messed things up with Frank, which I'd probably largely agree with you on. Like I think again he's been totally misused. But like I think you look across this roster, there have been positive developments from all the Knicks young guys. And again, it's kind of the first year of this regime as a totality. So I'd argue you have to kind of give it more time. I'm not saying everything's been encouraging, but I think you're comparing the Nets, which have been in this framework for 3-4 seasons now versus the Knicks, where they're 40 games into this.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I think that there's been some hits and some misses for the Knicks, but I think that no one on the current roster is going to be the best player when the Knicks are good, if they're ever good again.
Well, I mean,
think,
KP, theoretically.
Well, sure, yeah. But
well,
I mean,
he hasn't gotten any better since he was a rookie.
Well, I mean, he was really good over the first, like, 20 games.
And then he fades every year. He fades every year.
Yeah, I mean, he's still much better than when he was a rookie.
But I think and the long-term success of the Knicks is going to come down to what their draft pick is this year and who they're able to get and who they're able to sign in free agency.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's,
like, I think, obviously, if Frank can improve offensively, that would be great. But I think that's more like an on-the-margins thing.
I think of the two teams kind of taking a look at the state of the franchises, I think the Knicks have the higher upside because the ability to get a Zion Williamson, a Ja Morant, RJ Barrett, whomever, combine that with KP and then be able to attract either a KD or a Kyrie maybe. And then you have the guys around them that the Knicks team right now is pinning their hopes on that instead are the fourth and fifth guys. And I think the Nets have a much more scalable way to be better.
I agree with that.
I just want to get in my take really quickly.
And that's it for this segment.
Just because if this is a bad take, no one will remember. But if it's a good take, I can reference it a lot. Mm-hmm. Zion Williamson, he's just big Dennis Smith Jr.
I hate that take.
Yeah, that's horrible. He's big Charles Barkley.
If it comes true. Remember this moment, folks.
I did. There was like a Knicks beat writer who's been on our podcast named Drew. I forgot his last name because I've never talked to him before. And he was only on with Alex. But shout out to Drew if you're listening. Great guy. He had a tweet that said like, Ja Morant. It's Morant?
Morant.
Ja Morant is just like 2019 Dennis Smith. That even though like I think
Morant, with that.
Morant's like a much better passer, I think. I just thought it was funny.
Well, I think all those...
I like comparing people with Dennis Smith. It's such a cutting insult to be like, he's Dennis Smith.
Those athletic point guards are...
It's like stabbing someone.
Yeah, he's a social media game of Dennis Smith.
Yeah.
So we'll wrap it up segment two. Got a little heated debate in. And then coming up on segment three, Marcus and I and Gavin is welcome to stay along. We'll discuss a bit more from a Nets-centric perspective, including the Spencer Dinwiddie injury.
All right, I could have given you guys that third segment, but it was pretty Nets-centric, and I didn't want to bore all of you. I have too much respect for your time, even on a Sunday. So if you're interested, for whatever reason, I'm certainly not, even though I'm on it. You can head over to Locked On Nets, give them a subscribe, and listen to that third segment. But if not, I hope we gave you enough to chew on. I don't know if Alex is going to listen to this episode, but if he does, maybe we'll get his thoughts on that Kevin Knox debate. But I did think it's interesting, and I do think it's easy when you're a Knicks fan doing a podcast for other Knicks fans to get into a little bit of a bubble in terms of both positivity and negativity and how it's fashionable to shit on Moutier, shit on Hardaway, shit on Cantor, and to love Frank and to love Kevin Knox and to love KP, which by God you should. But it's nice having someone who's more objective, or in the case of Josh, maybe even has a little bit of a vendetta against the Knicks. I'm sure you heard that in there. It's good to get that perspective and have someone kind of challenge your preconceived notions on these guys and question, like, is it all that good? And you look at Kevin Knox's counting stats, and they aren't all that good. And now he's not watching a whole lot of Knicks games, and I'm watching a lot of Knicks games. You guys are watching a lot of Knicks games, and you see flashes that he maybe doesn't. But again, the stats are the stats, and they don't lie to a certain degree. So I think, again, it's a worthy conversation. I'm glad we got to have it. And I think it maybe I'll be a little bit more objective on someone like Knox and someone like Frank going forward, and kind of question just how positive I am on those two guys a little bit more aggressively. Anyways, that is it for this edition of Locked On Knicks. We're still deciding. I don't know if we could do a Heat game recap tomorrow, or we could give you guys the mailbag and then do the Heat and the Hornets in one podcast. If you have a strong opinion on that, certainly tweet at us. It'll more likely come down to a conversation that me and Alex have tomorrow than anything you say, but we certainly appreciate your input. Okay, with that, hope you're all having a great weekend. We really appreciate you taking time out of your weekend that you should probably be spending with your friends or family to listen to this podcast. It's really shout out to you guys. And be good. Enjoy.